So we may ask a question here that all this is very fine, sounds good and great, and it's all right for Savitri because after all she is the Divine Mother incarnate. What about us mortals? Does it apply on us? The first fallacy is to believe that we are us mortals. So this is the first fallacy. It's true that at this point of time we are a struggling humanity, but it's not true of our eventual reality and not true of our essence. So this question can be asked. It can also be asked that many times we may try but not succeed. Sometimes, and that too, death. Is it really possible to keep death away? Is all this possible? But precisely, if it was possible only for Savitri, then it will have no relevance. This is, we see so beautifully in Nirodha's correspondence, asking Shurbindo that all this is all right for you, you are an avatar. What about us? And Shurbindo reveals repeatedly that it would be a freak in case it is only meant for the avatar. It is a possibility for the whole race. So it's a possibility, a door open for everyone, and which Savitri will personify and show how to do it. So this is the beauty, and the next passage is again a very revealing passage, and it starts very beautifully, and it also shows how fate works out. So we know that behind all these appearances, there is a wisdom which is there. There is a truth which is pressing from behind, and there is a truth which is drawing us above. So we are caught between two layers of truth. This is how the actually Vedic Rishis put it. On one side, there is the truth above, superconscient, all-knowing, blazing in its light. On the other side, even down below, the inconscient, there is truth hidden. So from both sides, we are pushed. So every which way we go, this pressure is going to eventually lead us towards that which we are destined. In other words, we are not left alone only to struggle with our fate. So here comes another magical line. Fate is truth working out in ignorance. So something is already decreed. Decree is not just death. Decree is what is going to come beyond. And death itself becomes a passage. So here, it's very beautifully revealed in another interesting Indian myth on death and immortality at another level, which is easier to relate to. And this is the story of King Parikshit. Parikshit has been cursed by a sage's son, Sandila Rishi, where he has gone and out of his, you know, a state of foolishness, arrogance, he puts a dead snake around his neck because he's wanting some water from the seer, and seer is deep absorbed in meditation. So Parikshit believes that this fellow is, you know, he doesn't even listen to a king. And in his arrogance of being a king, he puts a dead snake around his neck and walks away. When the seer's son comes and sees it, he is also not an ordinary person. So he says, whoever has done this to my father, 7 days after this, he is going to die bitten by the same snake. Now you see, it's a curse. But here also we will see every step ultimately is part of a large chain. So one would say, oh, it's a very bad thing to happen, and why did the Rishi's son cursed him? But see the whole story. So when the king wakes up, when the Rishi comes out, he sees the snake, he just takes it and puts it aside. The son is still angry and he says, you know, this is what has happened and this is what I have done. So he says, oh, you shouldn't have done it. What? Why should he die for only putting a little snake around my neck? But he says, anyways, now you have said, so it's going to happen. He doesn't, you know, say any other solution for it. So then when the news reaches, of course he knows about it and he does not know what to do. So he calls all the people and for a counsel and says what to do. So most of them suggest, like our legal experts, that the remedy is shut yourself inside doors. Make sure that not even a, you know, breath of a snake cannot enter. So very simple. You are going to die of a snake bite. No snake, no death. Solution very simple. So this is the solution given to him. He says it can't be that simple. After all, seer, son and all these curses eventually end up fulfilling. No, he doesn't believe. He says, no, I want to consult the rishis. So there are some sages in his kingdom who will not say things only to please the king, but say what is true. So he calls them and asks them. So the sages say, well, you are going to face death, this much is sure. But one thing we can do, salvage these 7 days, turn them into golden opportunity. He says, how? If I am going to anyways die, what can I do except maybe make a will and helplessly wait? He says, no, you can liberate yourself from the very bonds of birth and death. He says, what? 7 days? All my life I have not done anything. He says, yes, 7 days. He says, but how? Is there a way that in 7 days I can get liberated from the bonds of birth and death? So the sage says, yes, there is a way, and that way is by reading the Bhagavat. Bhagavat is the story of Krishna, and Mother and Shobinda have spoken very highly about it, that it's written by the seers who had the occult knowledge. So he says, all right. So that's how Bhagavat in its modern form has come. Through this is the background, and then the Bhagavat is revealed. And it has stories about death, about Krishna's birth, life, exploits, and toward the end, it's a very uplifting scripture. Parikshit says, well, I am beginning to see this whole world as nothing but Krishna. Life is Krishna, death is Krishna. What does it matter? I am ready to embrace death. So sure enough, on the 7th day, the snake comes concealed inside a flower garland and bites him, and he embraces death. But embraces as a free man. Those 7 days he makes a choice which turns death into an opportunity to arrive at immortality. Now this is the beauty of the story. Raja Parikshit was destined to arrive at immortality. He was not an ordinary person. He is a child who in the womb has been revived from death. He is blessed by Krishna. He has died in the womb. Already he has faced death. And he has been revived by Krishna. Now somebody who has already died once and revived by Krishna, he is not destined to die the ordinary way. He has to be a free person before he faces death. But he has all his life been busy with the kingdom. So now we see every step, the foolishness of the king of picking up a little snake and putting around. The curse of the little boy. Everything becomes a step to eventually lead him to immortality. This is called fate is truth working out in ignorance. It chooses its ways, and every random step becomes part of a vast chain. Is it possible? Well, for us, there is another possibility. We too can read Savitri for 7 days. And I really believe if we do it sincerely, we'll get that inner freedom. Is inwardly free. This is easily available to us. We have the modern Bhagavat of a Bhagavat, because Bhagavata is the story of the Krishna avatar. Savitri is the story of Matri avatar, the avatar of avatar. It's the story of the avatar. And the story of the avatar is always liberating, because it's, you know, it lifts us to those heights. Of course, people have turned this thing into Bhagavat Saptas, where, you know, the Pandit who reveals the story is eyeing on the money, and the people who have come, they are eyeing on the merit. So we have to also have the consciousness of King Parikshit. In other words, we should know that life on earth is so precarious, so uncertain, full of so many ups and downs, and how much time we waste in ignorance. Why not put all our energies to eventually come out of this state in which we are caught? Then it's beautiful. Then reading Savitri is amazing as a guide, as a master of yoga with an aspiration and a seeking. Fate is truth working out in ignorance. It will eventually have its say, but because we are in ignorance, the forces do not obey, it will push things in a certain path, but eventually we will reach that point. O king, so what does it mean? Fate is truth working out in ignorance. O king, thy fate is a transaction done at every hour between nature and thy soul with God for its forcing arbiter. So first thing is that what choice we make at a given point of time. And this is of course the path of yoga. In yoga, we have to struggle with age-old habits. They may be habits of physical nature or vital nature or thinking. So the method is, it's there in Synthesis of Yoga, and of course a well-known method. We all are aware of it. So we, for some time, we will go by the machinery of habit repeatedly into the same groove. But if something in us refuses to consent, so after a while there will be on one side a part which separates and which is not giving the consent, and on the other side nature which is unrolling itself according to the past law, not karma but habit. But if we continue the refusal and refuse the consent, eventually this refusal will stamp itself on nature and things will change. That moment we do not know when it will come, but it will come. Some habits will be like this, for some others will be take a long time. But our work is to continue to refuse give consent. Of course, if there can be an integral sincerity, it's wonderful. But even when habit overtakes, deep inside there is no, this is not what I want, then eventually it will be successful. So this great truth is being revealed to us that thy fate is a transaction done at every hour between nature and thy soul with God for its forcing arbiter. And nobody else knows. We know within our hearts. People say, oh, he's the same stupid fellow. Doesn't matter. Inside, what is happening, the divine knows. What is our inner condition, inner state. What we should not do is to say, oh, what to do, this is nature. That is dangerous. Or even worse, more dangerous, justification. Why won't I do it? After all, this fellow told me this, I am bound to feel insulted and angry. And if I am angry, I am also going to give him back. If we do this, then we are giving another kind of consent to go on nature's ways. But there is another thing we can do, is to refuse. Fate is a balance drawn in destiny's book. So we hope that all of us have somewhere a khata opened. Even if 15 lakh rupees has not come in it. It doesn't matter. But a khata is there. See, it's a great thing to have at least a balance book. Bank book. Why? Because fate is a balance drawn in destiny's book. Man can accept his fate. He can refuse. So we'll say, but there are people who keep refusing, but they keep on struggling with situations and they don't change. So Shivinda would tell us, wait. I know about that. Even if the one maintains the unseen decree, he writes thy refusal in thy credit page. How beautiful. So when we open a khata, an account book, we have already started. It started ticking. Every time that we take God's name, every time that there is a flicker of aspiration, forget about a blazing aspiration. Every time we go and tell mother, however half-heartedly, mother, I want to be yours, I belong to you. It is written in her book. Maybe in this life, we cannot fully fulfill it. But we are born with this credit page. It's added to our new account book. We forget it. But he does not. This is what is called writing in the credit page. So we should yet seek that which is our goal. Shubhendu writes it very beautifully in one of his aphorisms. In fact, they are a set of two aphorisms. If God assigns me a place in hell, I do not see why I should struggle to come upward to heaven. This is the first aphorism. It's acceptance, surrender. Then the next aphorism is, if God puts me in hell with one hand and lifts me towards heaven in the other, I yet must struggle towards heaven. So this is very interesting. So mother comments it, that all is God. But in this play, one state is where we are not having this aspiration to rise upward, or whatever be the situation, circumstances, we learn to accept and surrender. Yet, we must know this is our goal. And even if everything is adverse, even if we feel nothing can happen, still we must aspire. There is no condition which can truly be called hopeless. There is only one condition which can be called hopeless, and that is when we refuse to aspire and refuse to have faith. This is the only condition which is hopeless. Shobindu puts it another place very beautifully. If you can, fight with your hands. If not, then with your mouth. If your mouth is also shut, with your heart and thoughts. So even if everything clamps us down, still, who can snatch this away? Nobody can. But we refuse to. We submit it to situation and circumstance. A lot of people say, come and say, oh, it's all very nice, easy to say, but what to do? I am so busy in my life. Where is the time to take God's name? It looks like taking God's name is such a, you know, big thing that we need some preparation. We have to do some puja, clean the place, sit there at an auspicious hour and take God's name. Anytime we can do. What does it matter? Even one moment, there is a very nice thing in Tulsidas Ramayana. Ek ghadi ya do ghadi adho me puniyad. Tulsi sangati sadhuki hare koti aparad. If one moment fine or two moments fine. If not, fraction of a half. Even that helps us march towards the great goal. And the mother gives this example to Huta. She says, you know, drops of water trickling on a stone. Of course, we know it's also an example in Kalidas' life. Drops of water trickling on stone can eventually pierce through it. It doesn't matter. Aspiration may not be strong. Even mechanically, it may not be with full force. Doesn't matter. Ma, even if one is not blind mechanically. And a day will come when the crust will melt. And that, when it will come, that is left to the divine. So this is what we can always do. Even in the face of death we can do. Even if the one maintains the unseen decree, wherever this one comes, it's a very cryptic use of one. Very often people say in Savitri, he and she is used differently. Absolutely true. He and she is used in many ways. Another word which is used very in different places, different meaning is it. It's very interesting. There can be whole thesis written on it. Another word which is very interesting is one. Who is this one? He doesn't say accountant, he doesn't say God, he doesn't say the one reality. So many places it is the evolutionary force. The one. He is the one, evolutionary energy, the evolutionary force which is in creation. And that notes. It writes thy refusal in thy credit page. For doom is not a close, a mystic seal. This is what King Parikshit had discovered. Death is not the end. Doom is not a close, a mystic seal. Arisen from the tragic crash of life, arisen from the body's torture and death, the spirit rises mightier by defeat. It is that's why this phoenix bird is the symbol of the avatar and also of the psychic being. It comes from high, enters into fire and rebuilds itself and rises up. Arisen from the tragic crash of life, arisen from the body's torture and death, the spirit rises mightier by defeat. Its godlike wings grow wider with each fall. Its splendid failures sum to victory. So what is needed is never to give up, whatever be the situation and circumstance. We have a very interesting story in Indian legends where two people who refuse to give up, who are enemies, and at different levels the story operates. It's the well-known story of King Prithviraj Chauhan and Temur. So Temur, that invasion, and Prithviraj Chauhan was a brave and valiant Rajput king. He would push him away, but spare him every time that no, we'll have dialogues. So again, Temur comes again. 17 times he defeats Temur, and then he again comes back to his own kingdom. 18th time, Temur comes prepared through all this, he doesn't give up. So this is one side that he refuses to give up. And he eventually captures the king. He defeats him and captures the king. And he is a cruel king. So he says, well, I am going to execute you. Now this king, he is a brave, valiant Rajput king who has always lived for honor. And he can't accept this. He is defeated, but he can't accept it. So he's thinking, how can I still defeat him? Is there a way? Is there a way? So he has a poet friend, Chand Bardai. It's a legend, but in all likelihood true. So he says, okay, we will try a way. So the king says, okay, anyways, I am going to die. So if you permit me, I may, you know, like to have my poet friend by my side. And he also, you know, gouged out his eyes. And, you know, I have learned how to shoot an arrow only with the sound. So maybe if you want, we can have a little bit of fun, some demonstration. Let me die at least, proving my prowess by hitting somewhere where there is a sound. So the Temur says, all right, let's have some fun. It would add to my cruelty. So he sits on a high throne and a gong has to sound somewhere and this king has to shoot. And the moment the king shoots the target where the gong is, he has to be executed. And this poet is sitting by his side. Now they have a pact that let the gong sound wherever it is. You give me the coordinates of the ruler, Temur. So he says a very nice, in a poem he tells the king, the coordinates of the conqueror Temur. And the poetic line is, Char baans, chobis gaj, angul ast praman. This is the height and this is the distance and this is the degree. Char baans, chobis gaj, angul ast. From wherever you are sitting, roughly. Chand Bardai was incidentally a great mathematician also. So roughly about this much degree, he is sitting. Tau par sultan hai. Mat chuko chohan. Don't miss this opportunity. This is the moment of your life. He says, all right. So the gong sounds somewhere and he shoots right into the heart of the king. This is a legend. And in all likelihood, true. So this is called not to give up even up till the last moment. And this is something we learn from English movies, you know, typical Hindi movie and typical English movie. Typical Hindi movie, the moment there is crisis, everybody would start praying. There would be some, you know, Mata, please come, or, you know, God, please come to my rescue, some bhajan, some prayer. In an English movie, he will push, push, push till the last minute. He will not give up. Now, you know, ideally, there should be a combination of the two. You will see in an English movie, nobody is praying, please come to my rescue, God, where are you? Not expecting an impossible miracle, but striving, striving. That movie, no, Mission Impossible. He doesn't give up. He says, so what? I am going to do it. I am going to do it. And does it eventually. And you say, wow. In Indian movies, Hindi movies, he'll suddenly start, you know, crying, oh, there is a bomb. Do something and there'll be a thunderbolt from top and, you know, the whole... But, you know, it doesn't work like that. We have to do our bit. So we have to push ourselves like Tom Cruise, even if we don't look like him. Because we are all on Mission Impossible. And our Mission Impossible is that the death bomb is ticking inside. And yet we have to do the impossible. Find it in time and defuse it. How many lives it's going to take doesn't matter. But we are on that. We may change vehicles. The spirit... Not only that, the spirit rises mightier by defeat. Its godlike wings grow wider with each fall. Its splendid failures sum to victory. Each failure comes to teach us something, makes us stronger. If only we know how to bounce back on life. If only we know not to give up, but to get back. And that's what makes a hero out of man. And then, like a Mahamantra, O man, the events that meet thee on thy road, though they smite thy body and soul with joy and grief, are not thy fate. So in one stroke, Shubhendu clears. And that's why we see when Savitri sits to discover her soul, what is that state? She says, time, life and death were passing circumstances. obstructing with their view her soul. They must be pushed aside. So these three responses, pain, pleasure and indifference, we should not linger long in it. It's all right. Momentarily we feel pain. It's all right. Sometimes we feel aha, pleasure. And sometimes we go through a phase of indifference. But we should not remain stuck there. That's not our goal. It's an appearance which has for the moment snared us. So these appearances, circumstance, event, these are not the fate. Then what is fate? They touch thee a while and pass. Even death can cut not short thy spirit's walk. Thy goal, the road thou choosest are thy fate. So this reminds us of the Maha Mantra of Sri Aurobindo. He who chooses the infinite has been chosen by the infinite. The goal. So we must, that's why Mother says we should be clear about the goal. It should not remain ambiguous. That is the fate. Even if seemingly we get something small, or if our goal is something like, you know, getting a job abroad and being a university professor, or maybe something else more lucrative, maybe a politician or whatever. It's no more lucrative though. So we because of the media, thank God. So we choose that goal. Now, even if we get it, it is not, and have everything that we wanted, it's a small goal. Small goal will keep us tied to smallness. And smallness can never give us happiness. Because his name is delight, and delight is vast. Not vast, rigid, as rightly pointed out, it's a plastic vast. Something which is teeming with so many things. It's not something like a formula which is expanded into something vast. So if we choose vastness, if we choose infinity, if we choose the divine, that is our fate. Something which truth will lead us to that, but working through our ignorance. Many things will happen. Good things will happen, bad things will happen. Pain will come, pleasure will come. It's all right. It's all part of the journey. We should not get distracted. So if we start for Pondicherry, on the way somebody comes and says, come, 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 why don't you get down? There is very nice, you know, on the way there is Hyderabad. It's a nice place. So we get down. Then somebody takes us to Salarjung Museum. Then we discover a friend who says, you know, I am going to Siliguri. Why don't you come with me? And we go to Siliguri. Then after many years, we say, oh my God, I have wanted to go to Pondicherry. Eventually we will remember. Something will happen. I have seen people after 25 years, and strange incidents. Somebody in Jorhat came to me with, her son, and full of distress, crying, could stop crying, because, you know, we went through a lot of crisis in life. And someone had told to meet so-and-so, the psychiatrist, and she started crying even more and more. And whatever assurance I may give, or whatever, the tears will flow more and more. So I was totally at loss and puzzled, what's happening? And then she tells me, after all this, she said, you know why I started crying? She had started crying narrating about the son. And then she looked around, there was a big picture of mother and the collected work, the SABCL in my office. And she says, oh my God, 24 years I had received this, and I had been to Pondicherry. I was suddenly remembering all this and I started crying. Suddenly, whether the child's crisis, of course, everything improves after a, you know, passage of time. Doctors and medicine unfortunately take the credit wrongly. Things improve and nothing can remain forever except the divine. But the real thing was that she once again got reoriented. After 24 years with so much of this, suddenly, oh, this is it. Divine had come into my life in this way, and the tears that flowed were really from the depths of the being. So it will work itself out. If we have chosen a goal, we will arrive there. This is more certain. Sri Aurobindo writes in one of his letters, he who has chosen the divine will reach the divine. This is more certain than 2 plus 2 equals to 4. But we may reach the short way, we may go a little bit holding hands, we may go through a rugged path, we may go through swimming in the sea, we may go singing poetry, or we may simply go while just sitting on the bed, whatever way, but it will come. So here it is, thy goal, the road thou choosest are thy fate. We may choose a long path, we may choose a short path. Each one's path to him. We may choose a narrow path, we may choose a wide path. We may choose a path which is easy, we may choose a path full of difficulties and challenges. Doesn't matter. And then the mother even says this, that there is a recompense. Some people take the longer path full of difficulties, but their realization is richer. So any which way, there are no losers in this journey, as far as we are clear about the goal. But if the goal is not clear, then it's a long process. So even death can cut not short thy spirit's walk. Thy goal, the road thou choosest are thy fate. On the altar, throwing thy thoughts, thy heart, thy works, thy fate is a long sacrifice to the gods, till they have opened to thee thy secret self and made thee one with the indwelling God. This is their work. So it's a long sacrifice to the gods. And these gods come in many forms. There were ancient gods. Their name was Varuna, Mitra, Indra, Som, Bhagi, etc., etc. Now we have forgotten those gods. Now we have shadowy gods, whose names are this party, that leader, this politician, this lawyer. They're also miniature gods. So we sacrifice to them. We part with money, we part with time, we part with energy. Doesn't matter. Ultimately, the gods are watching all this. And every thought, every feeling, every gesture, every act is their material. They pick up and offer it as sacrifice in the Vishva Yagna. What a beautiful image it is. And it all goes into the Vishva Yagna. And then after a while comes like a lucky draw. Okay, this for this fellow. So everybody is given their own share. It's not what we want. It's what the wisdom chooses. So here these lines. O soul, so what we receive is that which will eventually push us towards the goal. O soul, intruder in nature's ignorance. So this was the original question of Ashwapati, that it has come into ignorance. Now, how does it come out? What is the issue? O soul, intruder in nature's ignorance, armed traveler to the unseen supernal heights. What a lovely adjective it is. Armed traveler. We may ask, what are we armed with? The biggest of armors or weaponry that we have is faith and will. Shubhendu says, if these two are there, everything can be done again. But if faith and will is gone, in fact, the mother says, if will is gone, even with faith, you can rebuild your life. That is why faith is so precious. And faith is the first thing we tend to lose. Oh, something good didn't happen. I don't know. Maybe there is no God. First thing we are ready to lose, throw out of our pocket. She says, guard faith as something more precious than the most precious treasures. Because faith and will can rebuild everything. Shubhendu says that in the beginning, in the synthesis, eventually it is the pressure of the will, the idea which acts like a tapas, and the faith which leads us on the path. So we are armed with these two things. So I often say that when people go for pilgrimage, you know, they go with very little. You must have seen people going to pick Ganges water for Lord Shiva. You know, but they carry two things. They are fed on the way. They know it, that there are places, dharamshalas, where they will be given food to eat. So they don't carry food and water. They will be given shelter, and they just carry one cloth which they will wash and wear it. But what they carry, one is a stick, danda, and the other is a torch, those who are intelligent. So these are two things, but at least the stick. Now this is the pilgrim's staff. The pilgrim staff on the journey, which Shobindo says is faith. It's a multi-purpose stick. It helps us when we are limping. But it can also be a good weapon to guard us against all those fellows, little bit creatures who come on the way. It also gives us support to climb the great path. So faith is like that. And it's also like a torch light which lights up the way. So this is the pilgrim staff which we must carry. So this is what we are armed with. Armed traveler to the unseen supernal heights. This is the kavach that Karna is born with, which must be taken away if Karna has to die. If he doesn't forego this, then it's impossible to kill him. Even Arjuna's arrow, even Brahmastra, nothing can touch him, because he is born with this special protection, his faith and his will to be. But the divine, because of the play, it's necessary, part of the play. Thy spirit's fate is a battle and ceaseless march. That's how in the Vedas, the soul's journey is described as a ceaseless battle. And our great historians have turned it into a battle between Aryans who came from beyond India and Dravidians who were the natives. It's not a battle between Aryans and Dravidians that way. It was a battle between the powers of the soul, powers of light, and the powers of darkness. So it's a march and a battle against invisible opponent powers, a passage from matter into timeless self. So why these guys have come? They have come to make us like real steel, strong to bear that great vision. Everybody says, oh, I want God's darshan. When will he come? If ever even 1 millionth of his light comes, we will faint. So all these fellows eventually help us. They make us more and more strong, sincere, ready, pure to bear that great vision, to behold it. So they also do their job, and they have to do their job. But we should not be carried away by them, but keep pressing. Adventurer through blind, unforeseeing time, a forced advance through a long line of lives, it pushes its spearhead through the centuries. What is this spearhead? What a word it is. In the Vedas, the soul is described as Agni Mile Purohitam. He's the priest of the sacrifice. Who is the priest? He is the spearhead of the sacrifice. So in all these rituals, yagna, the priest first mutters the mantra and then others chant with him. So he is the spearhead. And as he advances, everybody follows him. Now who is the priest of the sacrifice truly? It is Agni, the inner will, the soul in us. So it is the spearhead. It creates a little point, and as it creates a point, the rest of nature follows. What a beautiful description. Spearhead. Shobhendra has used this, so many beautiful descriptions of the soul. At one place he says, a fathomless point and a wide bliss. So at once, two things. Across the dust and mire of the earthly plane, on many guarded lines and dangerous fronts, in dire assaults, in wounded slow retreats, holding the ideals, ringed and battered fort, or fighting against odds in lonely posts, or camped in night around the bivouac's fires, the camp's fires, awaiting the tardy trumpets of the dawn, in hunger and in plenty and in pain, through peril and through triumph and through fall, through life's green lanes and over her desert sands, up the bald moor, along the sunlit ridge, in serried columns with a straggling rear, led by its nomad vanguards, signal fires, marches the army of the way lost God. What a lovely thing to remember. Many, many, many events and circumstances, a battle. Sometimes we move through gardens, sometimes through ascents, sometimes through sunlit ridges, sometimes bald moor, mountains or hills which are absolutely denuded. Sometimes we are besieged by opponent forces. Sometimes we have to make wounded slow retreats. Sometimes we hear the trumpet of victory. Sometimes we have to simply light a campfire when all around is night. But look at the end. All this is part of the journey. This is the journey of the soul. So all these events and circumstances are only circumstances of the journey. spanning through many lives and makes the whole thing so beautiful. We are stuck with the scene and therefore we fail to advance. We should not remain stuck to one scene. It's not good, because then we refuse to advance. We must move. Move on, move on, move on. And that thing, sometimes we are alone holding a post. Sometimes we are only moving with the ideal's flag. Like Baji Prabhu, who must fall. But the flag should not go. These are the different ways through which the journey goes on. How inspiring this is. At length, he fronts indomitable line. At length, his fronts indomitable line. Forces the last passes of the ignorance. What is the front's indomitable line? The spearhead, the soul. Eventually, it pushes nature through the passes of ignorance. Passes of ignorance where all kinds of ambushes are awaiting. It's amazing, you know, when Mughals had come, it's very interesting. They came through the Khyber Pass, Hindu Kush. It's very, very hard terrain. It's not an easy terrain. And there's a story of the great empress who was born on the way. I'm forgetting her name, probably Mumtaz Mahal. And she was really very wise and who was even taken by bandits. And eventually she finds her destiny, almost abandoned to death, but eventually revives and discovers her destiny, which is to be a great and wise empress. So through all these passes of ignorance, eventually truth will lead us. Advancing beyond nature's last known bounds, reconnoitering the formidable unknown. Beyond the landmarks of things visible, it mounts through a miraculous upper air, till climbing the mute summit of the world, he stands upon the splendor peaks of God. This is the end point. So behind is God, end is God, and in the middle he wears many masks to take us. So in the middle also there is God. That's what Shubindo gives in one of the very beautiful Bangla letter. He says, in the beginning is mother, at the end is mother. The mother is the beginning, the mother is the goal, and the mother is the path. This is all that we need to know. Rest is all masks that she has worn to help us. Sometimes she wears the mask of Maheshwari and knowledge comes pouring down and we are wise. Sometimes she comes as the mask of Kali, mother the terrible. Still she is mother who loves. Sometimes she is Mahalakshmi, enchants us with her smile. At other times, like Mahasaraswati, she asks us to work 100 times on one small mistake. Because she is a perfectionist, what to do? Every small thing, detailed working. Mahasaraswati is at work. She will come in various ways, whose names may be wife, sister, mother, daughter. But it is Mother Mahasaraswati. She will not spare us. No, 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 you have to do it. Do it, do it, do it. So many ways she will come. These are, of course, beautiful masks. She may wear even terrible masks, really frightening masks. Still, she is the mother. So that's the journey. And it ends where we will stop. In vain thou mournest that Satyavan must die. There is no need to mourn. Why? Because his death is a beginning of greater life. So all destruction is the start of a new creation. And wherever we see a mighty destruction, that means there is a still greater momentous new creation waiting round the corner. So instead of lamenting the loss, our hearts should be filled with anticipation of the dawn which is approaching us. So we'll continue tomorrow, same time.